This is an oral history for the Waseca County Historical Society. The title for this series is Reflections of the 40s. An interview with Darrell Pete Knight by Audrey Knight Schmidt. The last name is spelled Neidt.
This is Pete Knight, and when I was asked to do this tape, I wondered what I could contribute. In reflecting upon that, I thought of the number of interesting people and places that I was involved with while in the service and during the 40s. To start back just prior to the war, when Hitler was invading Europe and people were very concerned about it. This in a small town, we were wondering when we would become involved. The people prior to the invasion, some of the work times were not that well. Some of the boys joined the National Guard prior to the war because of the lack of jobs around here. There were a number of them from Waseca joined the Otana unit. These men were sent to Louisiana for training, and they were some of the first ones involved in the war when they were shipped to Africa to become involved in the war that an action that first took place there. I guess some of the first real thoughts I've had on that time was when some of the casualty lists started coming back, and one of the ones that first really affected me the most was when a good friend, Paul Lynch, was killed at that time. And this really brought home to us the fact that the war was for everyone, and when the time for the draft came, it seemed like most of the young men were not eager to go, but were willing to go to do their part. I was drafted from Waseca County, and a number of us, naming a few that were drafted at the same time, were Glenn Robshaw, Harvey Oliver, Glenn Meidel, my brother Dallas, and I. And we were sent to Camp Dodge, Iowa by Des Moines. There we were inducted in the Army and sworn in by the governor of Iowa on November 11th, 1942. This being an induction center, they more or less gave you physicals and some testing to see where you would fit into their into the service for your best capability. After the testing, Glenn Robshaw, Harvey Oliver, and I were sent to Kearns, Utah. That's just outside of Salt Lake City. With more testing, they determined that Glenn Robshaw and Harvey Oliver and myself would be put into the Air Force in their airplane mechanic program. So from there, we were sent to Lincoln, Nebraska, to the Lincoln Aeronautical School for training in this program. Lincoln was a very nice town. We were situated in the town, not in a special camp there, and took our training at the aeronautical school downtown and ate in a cafe. So it, to our beginning Army life, was not as rigid as it was later on. We completed our training there, and Harvey Oliver and I were then sent to Burbank, California, which was a specialist school for P-38 airplanes. It was a Lockheed Big plant that built these planes, and there we were able to have close ties with the plane and some of the training there. From Burbank, we were then sent to Fresno, California, at Hammer Field, which was a more or less a basic training camp for Army procedures and also for further assignment. From Fresno, I volunteered to join the aerial gunnery school and was sent to Kingman, Arizona to participate in their aerial gunnery. The plane we were trained on was a B-17 bomber. We had classroom instructions. We had different shooting methods that were used at this time. We started out at such a lowly gun as a BB gun to teach some of the people that were not well versed in the use of a gun, that how to point, how to lead with a gun. From there we moved up to using shotguns and at skeet ranges for further training in the use of a gun. From that point on, we moved up into machine guns, 50 caliber machine guns, where we were trained on what they call ground-to-ground firing. On this here, you would have a moving target on the ground and would be trained to shoot and lead this target for properly hitting a moving target. The next step in the program was for what they called air-to-air firing. On the air-to-air firing, we would be in a plane and they would have ground targets for us to fire on. Later on, they trained us where they would tow targets with a tow plane and we would train shooting at the tow target. They later developed using some plastic bullets and putting protection on flying pursuit planes, where we had actual practice at shooting at our own planes with plastic bullets to test our firing ability. Along with this here, we had classroom instructions on the operation of a turret, the maintenance of guns, and so forth. While at Kingman, I met a number of other Waseca boys. When I was in the training program itself, Bobby Brown of Waseca was there in training also. After completing that program, I was kept as an instructor. My shooting score and schooling, they determined they would keep me as an instructor, which later turned out to be a blessing, because I reflect now I wanted to go, but it turned out to be a blessing in that I was not sent overseas. While being an instructor there, we had other Waseca boys that come through for the training, a Morris Hecht from Waseca and a Herlof Offerson. Other fellows from the area also went through the school for training. There was a Bussy, a friend of mine from Mankato, came through. They were trained in a number of different positions on the plane. There was an upper turret that's on top of the plane. There was a ball turret that hung underneath the plane, two waist gunners, a tail gunner, and a nose gunner. All these positions had to be properly covered by people during the time of an attack. I was surprised at the number of volunteers they had for this program. There were always more young men volunteering for gunnery school and training to be a gunner than the program could handle. With the casualty rates they had at that time, sometimes as high as 50% when the battle for France and Europe was in its highest peak. With this casualty list, you would be concerned on how or why people would volunteer for this program. I guess it was more pride in themselves and pride in their country, and I like to believe some good patriotism wanted or directed them to be volunteer for this. I want to stop for a minute and check in.
Okay, we are back again now. Would you like to continue?
Yes, I'd also like to bring up that in this training program, they also had some foreign countries that took training. One of them that was interesting to me was the Chinese nationalist soldiers they brought over for training. They did not understand the English language, and so they were taught through an interpreter. And in the classroom instruction on that, they had many men with brilliant minds, in as much as when you would instruct them, they would almost remember word for word in some of the instructions that you gave them. I do believe the American soldier had an edge on them in the respect that many of them were used to driving either farm machinery or cars or so forth. They were much more able to handle the equipment mechanically and to foresee troubles and repair troubles faster. It was interesting teaching them, though, that when you would test them on some of the knowledge that you had given them, they would answer the test in almost identical word for what you said or had the interpreter tell them. They were a very athletic or active group. Where for a recreation we would play volleyball, and in most cases our height was a foot higher than many of them, but because they were so determined to win, they always gave us a good game in volleyball. Some of the interesting things we did at Kingman, being that it was located more or less on the desert of Arizona, the town was very small, probably the size of New Richmond. And with the number of soldiers there, it was not a treat to go to town. So many of us took up the hobby of rock hunting and would take trips out around into the desert looking for different style rocks. We also went down along the Colorado River and crossed over onto the California side up into the hills and would check places where old prospectors had looked in this area and had piled up stones indicating where they claimed this certain section for themselves while prospecting. After teaching there about a year, I was transferred to Laredo, Texas to an instructor school to sharpen up on some of the new advances they'd made in gunnery. And on some of the equipment that they had at that time, being an automatic Sperry computing site, which helped in the proper usage of guns and aided in being able to shoot down the enemy while they were attacking with much more efficiency. One of the things we did at Laredo when off duty would be to go over into Mexico, old Mexico, and do some bargain shopping. With our limited finances at that time, that was a real treat for us. After completing the course, instructor's course at Laredo, Texas, I was then sent to Dyersburg, Tennessee, to continue instructing in the gunnery program. While at Dyersburg, the Army sent out a directive that twins could be together while in the service. My twin brother Dallas was in Scotts Bluff guarding German prisoners of war, and we decided that it would be nice to have him transferred to the Air Corps at Tennessee. So we applied for it, and he was transferred there and joined us in our program. While at Tennessee, we received the news of the death of President Roosevelt, which shocked us very much. Also, the VE Day, or the end of hostility in Europe, ended. The news came to us there, and there was much celebration, and everyone, all of us were so happy that there was a possible coming to the end of the war. With this news, they started slowing down or cutting back on this program, and decided to close out the base at Dyersburg. So after teaching there a year, I stayed on for a while to help. I transferred the headquarters section there to help transfer the remaining soldiers from that base either to other bases or to send them home on the ones that had enough time in the service. From Dyersburg, when that was pretty well closed down, I was then sent to Alexandria, Louisiana, which was also a base for returning soldiers home. I worked in the headquarters company there, also sending more of the soldiers home. Finally, after the end of the war, I had enough points to be discharged myself. I was then sent to Montgomery, Alabama, which was my discharge base, and was sent home from there. I would now like to go back a little bit and reflect on some of the situations starting at the war, how some of the families in Waseca were affected. In many cases, there were many or multiple sons sent from homes into the service. I know of a Jim Summers' family that had five boys from their family go to war. My own family, my brother Glenn was in the Seabees. That was Merchant Marines. My brother Norman or Pinky joined the Air Force as a navigator, and my brother Dallas and I were both in the Air Force. So it was pretty much total involvement with many of the families in Waseca. There were the E.F. Johnson Company was much involved in the war, making equipment, and did retain some people there that were vital to their industry. There were many farmers doing a good job producing the food needed, and they were retained to feed the nation. Just prior to the war, to give you an idea on some of the wage scales, I was employed at in Audit the State Experimental Farm. during a summer program there at 25 cents an hour. After, when the fall came, I went to work on a farm and was paid $6 a week plus my room and board for farm labor. So the money was not a great, there was not a lot of big money for young workers at that time. Upon being inducted into the service, my beginning wage there was $21 a month. Out of this here, $21, you were, would need to pay your laundry bill. Most everyone participated in a small amount toward buying war bonds, and that didn't leave too much to spend. My next upgrade was to private first class. I believe the wage at that time was $38 a month. Then up to corporal, the wage was $54 a month. Then finally, at my last raise was to a sergeant, which was $76 a month. One of the special things about being in the Air Force, if you had flying time, you received one half more pay extra for flying pay, which helped very much in making it much more pleasurable and for having the money to spend. Some of the incidents that we had that might be of interest is traveling by troop train from one camp to another. This here was not a priority transportation, because most of the time they were moving other war goods from one coast to the other, so on a troop train it was more or less a slow rolling train that would take 3 and 4 days to get you from Lincoln, Nebraska to the West Coast, and you would be served meals on this train and mess kits, which didn't make it a pleasant thing. There were people along the way that were very nice to the soldiers, and at different times, one I recall was at Palestine, Texas, where they, when the train stopped there, the people of the town brought on hot coffee and donuts and oranges for us, and this made you feel very, very good that they had this thoughtfulness for the soldiers. Other reflections I had was sometimes people would use the soldiers for their own advertisement or glory. I remember at Camp Dodge, Iowa, Tommy Dorsey had a program in town where he was broadcasting over the radio for that he was entertaining troops. We were loaded onto the back end of trucks and driven the miles from camp into Des Moines. We were rushed into the auditorium and told to be quiet while he played, and would explain to all the people how he was entertaining the troops. Immediately after the program was over, we requested he play one special number extra for us, and he said no, his players were tired. So we thought we were used in that situation. Many people were very good to the soldiers, inviting them to their homes. I remember while being at Burbank, California, a family invited me to their home for meals, and then on Sunday morning we went to their church, which was the biggest church in Los Angeles, which not only for the religious experience was an experience in just viewing a type of church like that. Other reflections I had was visiting the Hollywood Canteen while out at Burbank. There the stars would come down and entertain the soldiers. That the time that I was there, three of the stars that I remember was Fred McMurray, who was behind the counter serving coffee and donuts and whatever. Red Skelton was there, and he put on one of his comical routines for us. And Kate Smith was there, and she sang God Bless America, which was very appropriate. And so there were many fine people that appreciated the soldiers and did what they could to help them to forget some of their loneliness from being away from home.
Would you like to reflect on your parents and how you helped out at home and that when, you know, before the war? And
yes. Before the war, my parents was Albert Ellen Knight. My father was a railroad machinist. There were four brothers and sisters in the family. My brother Glenn, Norman, myself, and my twin brother Dallas. I had four sisters, Ann Lou, Nadine, Audrey, and Romel. Just prior to the war, my dad passed away, and thus the boys in the family were needed to help support the family. When we were inducted into the service, the family allotment for servicemen at that time aided greatly in this. We were able to send money home to help out. Reflecting again on some of the special days, when Pearl Harbor was announced on the radio, I recall that my brothers and myself were in our family living room and were quite shocked to hear this and some of the statements we made at that time, and I'm sure other young men made as well. Here we go, and it was very true. When we heard Roosevelt's radio announcement of the war, then it confirmed our belief that we would all soon be in the service. On D-Day, I recall that after being in the service for quite a while, one of my sisters, Audrey, was getting married, and I had gotten a furlough and had come home on furlough to be in the wedding. And at that time is when D-Day took effect, and it was a number of harrowing days listening to what transpired on D-Day, on the casualties and the hardships while American soldiers made their landing. Some of the different organizations that were very beneficial to the serviceman was the USO organization. At most big places, they had a building with that was available to soldiers, and there you could relax, or they had special dances or little lunches that you could have. My favorite organization, I believe, was the Salvation Army, that and the number of things that little things they done for the servicemen to help them out, visiting, especially at Christmas time, they helped set up Christmas trees in different places around camp. They gave cigarettes to the soldiers, and in some special cases, like in the hospitals and so forth around camp, they would have gifts, small gifts for them, and they seemed to be untiring in their work. Some of the other reflections I had was, while home on my first furlough, I met with Paul Isker, who was also on home from Yuma, Arizona. He was in their gunnery program at Yuma. And so we discussed the different trainings that we had. And after furlough was completed, and in later on when the Battle of the, for Europe was in its height, I read in the paper where both Bob Brown and Paul Isker had been killed, which was quite shocking. On some of the furloughs that I took home, I would pass through Chicago, and my brother, half-brother Gervis, was there, and we would meet and visit, and then would return home to family and friends, which is always a welcome break.
We'll flip the tape to side two now. Side two, Remembrances of the 40s, an interview of Darryl Pete Knight by Audrey Knight Schmidt.
Other remembrances I had were on a pass to Los Angeles while I was stationed at Burbank. One evening, Sunday evening, I believe it was, they had a complete blackout of the entire area. And the rumor that was told at that time is they suspected Japanese airplanes over Catalina Island, and for security's sake, they blacked out the whole West Coast. I was discharged on January 10th, 1946. I returned to employment at Herder's for 50 cents an hour. On May 25th, 1947, I married Millicent Wallstrom. My family, three children, are Nancy, Mary, and Neil. Some of the final recollections I have is when everyone was returning home, we had a lot of extra steam and vinegar left in our systems to burn out, so we would collect around the lake at a number of the nightclubs or restaurants that were prevalent around the lake. And Saturday night was a night to relieve all your tensions, and we had about 6 months where all the old war veterans would go out and tell of their experiences and I guess more or less get the war out of their system. Like a number of people since then have told me that they wouldn't give $1 million for the experiences they had, but it'd take more than $10 million to get them to do it over again. This would be my final recollection on this war experience.
This ends the interview of Darryl Pete Knight, son of Albert and Ellen Knight, on Remembrances of the 40s. The Knight family home was at 709 Fifth Avenue Southeast, Waseca, Minnesota. All four of the sons of Mr. and Mrs. Knight, Glenn, Norman, Darryl, and Dallas, returned home safely.